The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Zion Primitive Baptist Church podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church, which is located in the Zion community near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Elder Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation of believers in the sovereign grace of God, where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. If you live in this area or are visiting here, we would love to have you attend worship services with us. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesday evenings at 6:30 p.m. I'm happy to note that our daily podcast is featured on Grace Alone Radio, which you can find at gracealoneradio.net. You can find the schedule on the website, and you can also download an app to your phone so that you can listen wherever you are. Grace Alone Radio is a 24-hour streaming service which carries the message of God's sovereign grace around the clock and around the world. Zion Primitive Baptist Church is located at 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. That's near the intersection of County Road 49 and Alabama Highway 159, about 8 miles north of Gordo, Alabama, and about 10 miles northeast of Reform, Alabama. If you're interested in finding more sermons, you can go to our website at zionpbc.com. That's zionpbc.com, where you'll find all of our posted sermons, as well as a link to subscribe to our podcast. You can also subscribe to our website, which will update you every time a new sermon is posted. As we continue our study of the better sacrifice of Christ in the book of Hebrews, we find that the Old Testament sacrifices could never make the people of God perfect. Indeed, those sacrifices were but a shadow of the true. They were an imperfect remembrance of sin, but Christ's sacrifice was the perfect forgiveness of sin. Christ's perfect sacrifice perfected us before God. Join us today as we continue our study of the many ways in which Christ was a better sacrifice.
Long ere the sun began his days, or moon shot forth her silver rays, salvation's theme was this was done in covenant by the three in one. The Father spake, the Son replied, the Spirit with them both complied. Grace moved the cause for saving man, and wisdom drew the noble plan. The Father chose His only Son to die for sins that man had done. Emmanuel to the choice agreed, and thus secured a new mercy. He sends His Spirit from above to call the objects of His love. Not one shall perish or be lost. His blood has bought them dear they cost.
Tonight, I want to go back to the book of Hebrews. We have been preaching through Hebrews off and on for quite some time, and As it often happens when we're preaching out of one book in sort of an expositional way, the Lord tends to lead us away from that from time to time, and it's important to be sensitive to the leading of the Spirit when it comes to that. But in the case of this book, it seems like He keeps leading me back to it even when we go away from it. So I trust it's of the Lord, and hopefully it is, and we'll see if the Lord will bless, then we'll get something out of it tonight. In the 10th chapter of the book of Hebrews, we find ourselves right in the heart of this book. We've said from the beginning that the theme of the book could be summed up in one word: better. Everything in the age of grace, including the sacrifice of Christ, and most especially the sacrifice of Christ, is better than what they had under the Old Testament economy. Doesn't mean there was something wrong. There was nothing wrong with the law. There was nothing wrong with the Old Testament worship. There was nothing wrong with what they had, but it was just given to them temporarily to lead them to the point where Christ came and fulfilled the law to a jot and to a tittle. So we've been looking at things like the better sanctuary, the better high priest, and now we're talking about the fact that Jesus is a better sacrifice. You know, I even hesitate to use the word better, Brother Buddy, because really, He's the best. It's not as if there's anything that could be compared to Him, but for sake of consistency, we will call Him the better sacrifice. He is a better sacrifice than the old sacrifices under the law. We have seen that His priesthood is better. We have seen that the covenant upon which it is based is better. We have seen that the sanctuary that is represented here, the heavenly sanctuary, is better. And now we are at the point, and we have been in the latter part of the chapter 9, talking about this better sacrifice. Now I want you to remember, though, a verse from the end of Hebrews chapter 8, because we're going to come back to that if the Lord will help us tonight to kind of wrap things up. The last verse of Hebrews chapter 8, verse 13 says, "In that He saith a new covenant, He hath made the first old. Now that which is that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away." You know, we call this the New Testament that we're reading from, and the Old Testament that contains Genesis through Malachi. We could call it the New Covenant. We could call it the Old Covenant. And what He's saying here in verse 13 is that there is a new covenant. Not new in the sense of God had to come up with it as a reaction to something, but new in the sense of its implementation, that it has now been implemented, and we are now currently under this new covenant, and the old covenant waxed old and is ready to vanish away. And let me just say, Lord being our helper, we'll come back to this. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but there are many religious orders today that seem to want to continue to resurrect the old way of worship. There's a lot of complicated worship systems out there. I'm thankful we live and we worship here at this church, and so many of you that are parts of Primitive Baptist churches, and that we worship in a way that is simple and unencumbered by the old ways of worship. Baptists traditionally have done that. Unfortunately, some today are going back into complicated systems, but under the new covenant, the old has waxed old, is ready to vanish away, and we are now under the new covenant. But in tonight's message, I want to start out in chapter 10 and verse 1, and I want us to begin looking at this better sacrifice that we have that is necessary for our perfection. So let's begin reading in chapter 10 and verse 1. "For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, and not the very image of those things, can never, with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually, make the comers thereunto perfect. For then would they not have ceased to be offered, because that the worshippers once purged should have had no more conscience of sins. But in those sacrifices there is a remembrance of sin, a remembrance again made of sins every year, for it is not possible that the blood of bulls and of goats should take away sins." Now here what we have is a declaration that Jesus' sacrifice on the cross is the ultimate perfect sacrifice that we need in order for us to be perfected. But before we leave the Old Testament sacrifices, let's ask the question, what,
What did the Old Testament sacrifices do for us? What did they do for us? And that's kind of what he's dealing with here in the first four verses. Now, the first answer to this that we need to be clear about is that the Old Testament sacrifices did nothing for us eternally. Nothing. In fact, he calls them only a shadow, and he calls it a shadow of good things to come. Okay? This shadow that he's talking about, this system of blood sacrifices, sacrificing animals every single day of every single month of every single year, was not a bad thing, okay? It was not something that was just a horrible and oppressive thing. It was more difficult. It was more complicated than what we have. But it was a shadow, but it was an anticipatory shadow. In other words, those were pointing. You know, whenever you start reading the Old Testament and you get bored with all the sacrifices, just remember something. That Jesus said, "These are they that testify of me." The Old Testament scriptures, the Old Testament sacrifices point forward to Jesus. They were an anticipatory sacrifice. The Jews who understood what was happening would have been excited every time a sacrifice was made. You know, now I realize by the time Jesus came, there was sort of a dullness to the worship that the Jews were engaged in. They were sort of going through the motions. It was rote and ritual and not, it was not worship. It was, and I say that about primarily the religious leaders of the day. They had become legalistic. They had become focused on the jots and the tittles of the law, which Jesus was going to keep, but they had become focused upon that, and things had gotten out of whack, so to speak. They had gotten out of focus. But I still can't help but think of some shepherd, some young or even older shepherd there that brought the little lamb down to Jerusalem to sacrifice, and maybe not fully understanding all that was going on, but there being a joy that leaped in his heart when that sacrifice was made, because they knew that a Messiah was coming. They misunderstood his purpose, but they knew that something better was coming. They knew that. But I can just see that hope blossoming in his chest as he makes that. Because the law was a shadow, but it was an anticipatory shadow. It wasn't a foreboding shadow. You know, most of the pagan worship of that day was foreboding. Most of the worship, most of the sacrifices made in pagan worship was made in order to keep the gods from raining down fire upon you. It was done to appease the gods. It was done because if you didn't, the gods would do something bad to you. But that's not what these sacrifices were about. These sacrifices were pointing us to something great, something wonderful, something glorious that was coming. And this is what the writer of Hebrews is telling us now, is listen, that which the sacrifices pointed us to is come. It's here. And now we no longer have to do those sacrifices because we've had a better sacrifice that came in the person and work of the Lord Jesus Christ. Because you see, when you talk about a shadow, you know what that means? There's something cast in the shadow. You think about that? If you got a shadow, you got a shadow caster. And the purpose which he was pointing to, notice what it says. It says those old sacrifices in verse 1 could not make the comers thereunto perfect. But you know what that means? That means that there's a sacrifice coming that could make the comers thereunto perfect. See, that's the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's the proof of that is verse 2, the proof of the futility of the law worship. Not futile in the sense, you know, God said do it, but I'm talking about the futility when it comes to making us perfect, to our perfection, is verse 2. For then would they not have ceased to be offered? In other words, if you were making a sacrifice for sins that was sufficient, you don't have to make another sacrifice. You're done. The sacrifice is over. But what happened was that the sacrifices weren't sufficient. It said, because if they were, would they not have ceased to be offered? Because if the worshipers once purged, should have had no more conscience of sins. And by the way, that's telling us something else. That now that we understand we have been purged, we should have no more conscience of sins. We're not still trying to get sinners to do something to be saved. You see, It's not, and I understand our friends and our dear ones out there that we love, dear children of God. Nobody, don't we should never make anybody think that just because you don't believe like we do, you're not a child of God. But I can tell you this, if you don't believe like we do, you're not as happy a child of God as we are. Because we understand that the purging has occurred. It's over. And see, what's happening is, if you're still telling sinners to do something to get saved, to get perfected, to get born again, to get to the point where they're right with God, then you're doing exactly what they're saying not to do here in the book of Hebrews. He said, if you've been purged once, you'll have no more conscience of sin. That doesn't mean you won't know you're a sinner, but the point is, you'll, with the understanding that you are a sinner, which has to come from God, you'll also understand there was a sin taker. There was a Savior that put this away. See, if those sacrifices had worked, then no more sacrifices would have been required. You know, you read about that over in Galatians chapter 3. Let's just go to verse 19. Wherefore then serveth the law? It was added because of transgressions, till the seed should come to whom the promise was made, and it was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. Now, there's a lot of preaching in that verse, but let me just say this. It's telling us here a little bit about what the law does and what it shows us, okay? That's where our understanding of the law is important. We need to understand, over in the 7th chapter of Romans, Paul makes clear that the law is not a bad thing. The law is a good thing. He said the problem wasn't the law. The law is spiritual. The law is a good thing. The problem is us. He said, the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. The law, the purpose of the law was never to bring us to God. Because you can't keep enough of the law, which, by the way, enough is all, is perfection. It's not like there's a majority rule here or even a two-thirds. It's a 100%. You got to keep every single part of the law, every single commandment of the law in order to get to heaven, you see. And that not just outwardly either, inwardly. You know the rich young ruler, you remember him? The rich young ruler, he kept it. I mean, maybe I don't have any reason to dispute him. I doubt he'd ever committed adultery or committed murder or any of those other things that Jesus said you should do. He said, all these have I kept from my youth. Jesus hit the nail on the head, though. He struck a nerve with him because he said, okay, that's fine. He didn't dispute it. He just said, now go sell everything you got and come follow me. He hit him where it hurt. See, he'd kept it outwardly, but inwardly he was still dealing with the greed and the covetousness. Paul said that if it hadn't said, thou shalt not covet, the law wouldn't have hurt me too bad. Although he was a murderer. He was he held the coats as they stoned Stephen. I could convict him in any court of law in Alabama for being an accessory to the crime, you see, for being a co-defendant, an accomplice. But the point is that the law is not the problem. The law is not the issue. The law was added because of transgressions. You know, there wasn't but one rule in the Garden of Eden. Just don't eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Okay? You didn't need a book. You didn't need a, you know, we use a online search engine in our courts to look up the law called Westlaw. And we have to do that now because there's so many volumes upon volumes upon volumes of laws and regulations and cases interpreting the laws. They didn't need Westlaw in the Garden of Eden because God just said there's one law, don't do this. But once they did that, transgressions began to multiply. Transgressions began to be an everyday occurrence, you know, both the outward and the inward. They didn't even know they were naked in the garden. They didn't even, or they knew it, but they didn't care. It didn't matter. But suddenly after that, the inward man became a problem and nakedness became an issue, you see. And of course, we know it's a terrible issue today. But my point is that they didn't need a law in the garden, but oh, because of the transgressions, there had to be a law. And God gave that law until the seed should come to whom the promise was made. And that's talking about Christ. Again, there's a lot of preaching there we could go to, but there was a law given up until the time that Christ came. Now look at verse 20. Now a mediator is not a mediator of one, but God is one. And he's pointing us again to Christ here. But now listen to this. Verse 21 is what I really wanted to get to. Is the law then against the promises of God? God forbid. See, the law did some things for us. We'll come back to that in a moment. But the law was not against the promises of God. The law kind of really just reinforced the promises of God in many ways. He said, God forbid, it's not against the promises of God. God forbid, for if there had been a law given which could have given life, verily righteousness should have been by the law. If there had been a way, I mean, you think about this. If you knew that the only way to save somebody else would be for you to give up to death one of your sons or one of your children, if you knew there was some other way to get there, wouldn't you go that route? I mean, now look, I'm not trying to bring God down to our level, because God didn't sit around and ponder and agonize over things. He didn't agonize over this. It was an agony in the garden that he experienced, but God didn't sit back and have to wonder, and, oh, how, ponder, how in the world can I fix this? Let's get together and have a powwow. That's not what they did before the foundation of the world. But just to put it in a format that maybe we can understand it, let's think about it this way. If you knew that there was another way to achieve the redemption or salvation of a people, a country, let's just say there was a country over here that needed redeeming out of bondage, and you could either do that by sacrificing one of your children, or you could do it some other way, wouldn't you choose the other way? I mean, I would every time. Frankly, I wouldn't even redeem the country, I'm afraid. I'm not as good as God. God was so gracious and loving that he sent his son to do it. But here's what he said. He said, if there had been a law given which could have given life, verily righteousness should have been by the law. All the people in all the world today who are trying to work their way to heaven in some fashion or another are going contrary to what this passage of Scripture talks about right here. And that includes those that think you can make a choice or you can exercise some part of your will by exercising faith or by exercising your choice to believe or by exercising your ability to give your heart to God, that sort of thing. All of those things are actions. They are effort, okay? But there was no law given by which life could be achieved. The only way was the sacrifice of Christ. So what did the law do? Well, we talked about Romans 7. Just turn over there for me just for a second. Romans 7 in verse 12 says, wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy and just and good. Was that, you know, again, I've said this all along, it's good, it's just, it's holy. It's not, nothing wrong with the law. So what was the law given for? Was then that which was good made death unto me? God forbid. Now listen, but sin, that it might appear sin, working death in me by that which is good, that sin by the commandment might become exceeding sinful. You know what the purpose of the law was? The law was not to bring us to Christ. It was not to provide a pathway that we could get righteous. The law was given to make sin exceedingly sinful. Because he goes on to say, the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. Now, there's a part of us, I believe, in every elect child of God who's been regenerated that knows when we do something wrong. There's something in us. Those who are over in the darkest reaches of Africa or the Amazon rainforest or New Guinea or wherever they may be that have never heard the name of Christ or read a sentence out of the Scriptures, they know, they have a conscience if they've been regenerated, and they know that something's wrong when they do it. They know something, when they do something wrong, that they've done wrong to some extent. So what about the law then? The law makes it clear that what they did was wrong. Remember young King Josiah? You remember him? Josiah became king when he was 8 years old, and his father and grandfather were wicked, wicked kings. He followed on the heels of some very exceedingly sinful men. But even before, you remember, the law was lost. The book of the law had not been read in apparently a couple of generations. He wasn't brought up in school studying the law. He didn't know much about the law. But yet he already began to make some changes in the way worship was done, and he began to get rid of some things. He knew some things that they were doing were wrong, and he tried to set them right. But then Hilkiah the high priest found the book of the law that had been lost in the house of the Lord. The temple had been shut down. There was no worship going on there. Hilkiah went to clean it out. He found the book of the law. He came back, and it came to pass, we're told, that when the king had heard the words of the book of the law, that he rent his clothes. And then he went and he commanded Hilkiah the priest, and he commanded Shaphan the scribe and several others that are named there to go and inquire of the Lord for him and for all the people concerning the words of the book, because he says this, and this is in 2 Kings chapter 22 and verse 13. He says, "For great is the wrath of the Lord that is kindled against us, because our fathers have not hearkened unto the words of this book to do according unto all which is written concerning us." You know what happened? To Josiah? Josiah, after he read the law, after it was read to him, he saw sin as exceeding sinful. He already knew sin was sin. He already knew it was wrong. But suddenly he realized just how wrong it was.
Due to the constraints of time, we will stop the message here. But please join us tomorrow for the conclusion of this message. If you would like to subscribe to our website, please go to www.zionpbc.com and sign up for email updates. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact the church at zionpbc1847@gmail.com. That's zionpbc1847@gmail.com. Or you can email me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter J. chrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. May the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.